Live from Chicago, this is Chris Roebling sitting in for Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our expert panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, professors, public servants, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast and border to border. Tonight, we're featuring commentary by Charlie Meyerson of ChicagoPublicSquare.com, Charles Lipson of ZipDialogue.com on the web, Dave Lundy, Aileron Communications, and Richard Porter, Chicago lawyer and former attorney in the George H.W. Bush White House. The program is coming to you from our home base at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in beautiful downtown Chicago. Hello, everybody. We're on State Street, that great street. And our toll-free phones are now open, 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. Please give us a call. Our website is also open at www.beyondthebeltway.com. Great to be back sitting in for my longtime friend, Bruce Dumont, and great to be surrounded by all of the eminence on this panel. Panel, I want you to congratulate yourselves for being so eminent. Now, let's prove it. I've got a quick question for all of you. We'll start with David Lundy and then go Charlie, Charles, and Rich. David, what happens to the GOP if this week it does not, or next week, it does not pass health care?
I think the GOP is in trouble either way. Frankly, I'm a little bit off the conventional wisdom here. I think they're better off if they don't do the current bill that's before Congress and they wind up having to negotiate with Democrats because that's what the people want.
Charlie Meyerson.
2016 cured me of any inclination I might have to make predictions. Let's see.
Oh, gosh. All right.
Well, I know. You're going to find me useless on this show. But
we're going to hope for
more.
I don't
know. It's this year, the last year in particular, has been so unpredictable. I wouldn't even presume to hazard a guess as to what's going to happen.
Charles Lipson, the fate of the GOP if they don't repeal and replace Obamacare in the next 10 days.
I think that their brand has already been badly damaged. And I think that probably whatever comes out of this will damage them more. It looks like it'll be very hard to put together a bill, purely Republican bill, that satisfies a lot of people. And if they negotiate with the Democrats, although that'll leave both of them holding the bag, they'll have a base that's just furious.
Will both bases be furious? I don't know. But Richard Porter, your answer to my first question, what happens to the GOP if they don't pass healthcare?
Well, I actually think they will pass health care, so I don't think it's going to be an issue. I think at the end of the day, they're going to rally around, you know, the need to fix Obamacare. It is falling apart on a real-time basis. And if Congress doesn't act, if they don't take some steps to reform Obamacare, it's going to collapse on its own weight, and a lot of people will be hurt. So I think that's an essential need for them. It's a political need, but it's also a practical need for them to get the bill done.
How do we understand the Republicans in the Senate here in almost late July, I mean, we're mid-July here after a Republican president was elected in November, and there isn't unity behind one program to repeal and replace? Charlie Meyerson.
That is astonishing. And it's
that's why I asked the question. Yeah, and you've got to have the answer.
I have no answer.
He's astonished.
I am astonished. This is a party that is in control of both houses. You've got a president who is charismatic, at least to his base, and why they haven't been able to get the ball across the finish line is a mystery to me.
Charles Lipson.
They didn't think that they were going to win the presidency. So all of the votes were peacock feathers. They were all posturing. They didn't.
The prior votes to repeal.
The prior votes. You could just vote for any darn thing. You didn't have to cost it out. You could put in exactly what you wanted. It was all Play-Doh.
Dave Lundy?
I like the Play-Doh, Charles. But, look, I think that it's pretty clear why they're unable to come up with a deal, and that's because the promises that they were making and the promises that the president made in the campaign were it literally impossible to keep. The math just wasn't there.
They were contradictory.
Right. They were completely contradictory.
I disagree. I mean, I think there was broad agreement on the principles, and there's just a practical difficulty of working out the details of a very complicated problem.
What are the principles?
The principles are to inject the free market into the healthcare system, and the problem is we've moved away from market delivery of healthcare into a system where the government's playing a primary role.
When did we have market delivery of healthcare?
Well, we had it certainly 30, 40 years ago, and every step the government has taken to reform healthcare has made the situation worse. I mean, that's the curious thing. And if you look in the areas where there is free market in healthcare, for example, LASIK and eyes or plastic surgery, costs continue to go down because there's not a third-party payer. Now, one of the things we've got to move to is a situation where consumers play a bigger role in choosing and driving healthcare. That's not happening today. I think there's broad agreement in the Republican Party about that being a need, but how we get there is a real hard part.
Dave Lundy, why aren't American consumers capable of making their own choices in healthcare? Why do they need a government plan telling them what they're supposed to get?
Well, first of all, I think that you have a typical problem with the free rider syndrome, something that you U of C types should appreciate.
Charles, of course, is also at the University of Chicago.
Yes, I
it's mostly
ahead.
I'm a free rider.
Yes.
Yeah, and Charles is a noted free rider.
So historically what happens is that you have people getting insurance when they're more likely to be sick and the healthy are not on the insurance plans, and because of that it screws up all of the economics of insurance. You must have a balance. That's why the Heritage Foundation in 1992 or 93 came up with this idea in the first place of having mandated insurance. You have to have it, just like we have car insurance.
Charles, is there still a role for market allocation of resources in American healthcare?
It seems like there should be, and the Republicans would actually like to move back toward it. I think when we talk about the market, we want to talk about a couple of things. The first is I think that there is now a consensus. The main thing that came out of Obamacare, I think, is not an effective health care insurance or delivery system, but rather a public consensus that the poorest people should not only receive health care, which they were already receiving in emergency rooms, but that they should receive some kind of subsidy for the insurance, that there should be an insurance-based health care system. And then there are going to be two kinds of people who can't get into that. One is are really poor people, and the other are people with very expensive pre-existing conditions. And so the question is always, how do you pay for those two categories?
And older people, but not quite Medicare age.
Right, right.
Isn't a defining feature of the problem that the Republicans are now facing not so much American consensus about helping the poor, but the Democrats' very sort of prescient maneuver to expand Medicaid eligibility from the poor to people who are not technically by government standards in other realms?
And this is the problem. Let me just say, this is a particular problem for a lot of Republicans who get huge numbers of votes from that. And here's the collective action problem, since we're talking about free riding. You can say, everybody, if we all storm the machine gun on the hill, we'll definitely overwhelm it. Chris, why don't you go first? So that's the problem that Heller and all these other people feel. They are vulnerable if they are the ones who are out there.
The phone line is 1-800-723-8289, 1-800-723-8289. I'm Chris Roebling, sitting in for Bruce Dumont. The program is Beyond the Beltway. We've got an all-star panel, and you're included if you make that phone call. Talk to you later.
A historic moment from the archives at museum.tv.
Thank you all very much, Admiral Kelly, Captain Card, officers and sailors of the USS Abraham Lincoln, my fellow Americans. Major combat operations in Iraq have ended. In the Battle of Iraq, the United States and our allies have prevailed.
Experience more history at museum.tv.
Most of my family, they never graduated high school, so I'm trying to break that barrier.
My daughter, Brooklyn, was also a motivation for me to go back to school.
Every day after work, went straight to school, and it paid off.
At age 26, Kareem finished his high school diploma. I could not have done it alone. I see the future is really bright for me.
No one gets a diploma alone. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Good evening, everybody. It's Beyond the Beltway. Sunday evening means Beyond the Beltway, and you might be hearing us on Sirius XM POTUS. You might be hearing us on the web at beyondthebeltway.com. You might be watching this on WYCC in Chicago. I think we're also on in Houston, Texas. We're also on a lot of Comcast stations. And, of course, we've got great friends doing radiated broadcasting, just like the old days.
And I think we have flyers. Radio. We have flyers out at most restaurants.
And there's somebody with a tomato soup can down the street, and they're listening in very closely. Chris Roebling sitting in for Bruce Dumont, taking a well-earned evening off. We've got an all-star panel. Richard Porter, Chicago attorney and former Bush administration official, Bush 41 administration official. Charles Lipson from the University of Chicago, former chairman of the Department of Political Science down there. Charlie Meyerson, a former longtime noted journalist.
Still
with ChicagoPublicSquare.com. And Dave Lundy, longtime radio presence in Chicago on the airwaves. We're talking about what's going to happen to the GOP or what's going to happen to health care. And I want to ask this question again. You were just getting into it, Charles, before the break, but I want to see if there's any reaction over here. The Democrats expanded eligibility for Medicaid. And then the Democrats sent money to the states saying, expand your Medicaid to match our eligibility. Some states took that, some didn't. Right now,
it was fadeaway money, though.
States, right. It wasn't going to stay forever. States like Ohio, led by Governor John Kasich, he took the money. Ohio spent the money. And now the Ohio Republican Senator Richard Rob Portman, former USTR, former OMB director, who understands the dynamics.
Yeah.
He is one of the moderating influences in the United States Senate about this bill around which the Republicans are trying to unite. What have the Democrats shown American society with this expansion of Medicaid eligibility, Charlie Meyerson?
I can only talk to you about what I know and the people I know and the stories that I've heard over the last few years. And what I have heard is people grateful that they can get insurance at any price. I'm just in my circle of friends. And this is something that has been a good thing for a lot of people that I've read about, that I know. And so the Democrats have shown that insurance can be had by people who didn't have it before.
Rich Porter.
I think Republican governors and Republican senators are finding out that there's no such thing as a free lunch. And they took a lot of free money from the federal government to expand the Medicaid program, a federal program. And now they're in a situation where they can't give it up because it's free. And those strings are what's tying up the Senate. That's part of the problem they have in terms of reaching a deal as to what to do about winding down that federal 100%
support. Can I ask a question about that, Richard? Yeah. What about the Republican governors, and I think it's only Republicans, that didn't take the money? How are they split from the ones that did?
Yes.
Is that part of what's going on
That's the
in
dynamic
the Senate?
You see. Yeah, so you have senators like from Arkansas and some of these other states that didn't take the money. They're saying, what happened to our free market principles, right?
Wisconsin.
So you know, part of the problem you have here is this, there you have the split within the party because of the practical reality that there are a lot of people that have free health care that are not the poorest of the poor. You've kind of expanded the scope of government delivery of health care. And so the idea of ratcheting back that federal subsidy is going to create a big budget hole for states like Ohio. So
Dave Lundy, a couple of things. Number one, we hear from the Congressional Budget Office that sort of more than 20 million people some years from now will not have insurance who otherwise would have insurance. Let's put aside the fact that the Congressional Budget Office has been grossly off base with its other estimates. Let's just take that. But isn't it the case that 13 million of those are people who are going to voluntarily leave the system? And if so, why is that a problem?
Well, first of all, I take issue with your premise because the Congressional Budget Office estimates have not been wildly wrong except in one case. But in fact, when you look at the percentage of insured that they predicted, they were almost dead on. Most of the predictions that they've made have been very accurate, if not conservative. So I disagree with you there. I think the larger question that you've got to face here is how are we going to provide the best and cheapest health insurance for the most number of people in the most reasonable way possible. And the problem is that the Republican bill, as it's currently constructed, is so everybody's so twisted up in knots to try to say, well, we repealed Obamacare because we've been promising to do that for 8 years. It did this and it did that. Well, you got the president's promise and it's not going to be mean anymore. It doesn't work. Can't we just get to what the American people want, which is let's fix Obamacare? And I think it's important that we have a little history here. I promise I won't take long. But the reality is every major social program that we've had in this country, after it's passed, there are always mistakes, there are always problems, and the other party usually works to fix it, like with Medicare Part D under George W. Bush. This is the only time that's not happened. So there are every Democrat I know says there are problems with health care, with Obamacare, that need to be fixed. Let's fix them.
Professor Lipson, what grade do you give Dave Lundy's historical interpretation?
Dave, you ignorant slut.
You better study for that midterm, pal.
SNL.
Non-denial, denial. He didn't say I was wrong.
I wanted a grade. What's the grade?
It is true that all major programs have these big problems with them. But it's also true, and I think Republicans would say, that they were also passed on a bipartisan basis so that we have buy-in on both sides, so that when something hits the fan, both sides are kind of held responsible. I think that the problem now is that I think the reason for all the repeal is that the Republicans never wanted to put any finger anywhere near the driver's wheel, lest they be given some sense of responsibility for it all. And I think that that's the big issue.
And now they have the wheel.
And here, now they have the wheel. Yeah. And this is, I think, illustrative of some real issues in the Republican Party. But I want to get to our friend Kevin in Knoxville, Tennessee, who's listening to us on the much appreciated WNOX. Kevin, your bottom line point for the panel, please. We're hoping to hear from Kevin. Are you there? All right. Kevin?
Hi. Yes.
Oh, all right. Kevin from Knoxville, Tennessee, go ahead. Your bottom line point for the panel.
No, I'm sorry. This is Kevin from Austin, Texas. But that's all right.
We like Austin, Texas a lot, too.
We have two Kevins calling.
KLBJ. We love KLBJ. Go ahead.
So my idea is I'm originally from Chicago, and whenever you talk to Michael Madigan about an issue.
Michael Madigan is the speaker. Hold on. Michael Madigan is the speaker of the Illinois House of Representatives. He's the longest serving state speaker of a House of Representatives in the history of the United States of America. Please continue.
Correct. And what he would always say when an issue would come up was, look at the map. If you look at the 10 or more senators that are Democrat incumbent up for re-election where Trump won, he'll be able to have more control of the Senate. So I don't think it matters if they win for the past health care or not.
Thank you very much, Kevin. Thanks for joining us on the program tonight. I want to say Kevin raises, I think, obliquely the question of the political impact of all of this, and I certainly think we should get to that. Does this hold the outcome of the 2018 congressional elections, this question of health care? Richard?
Well, you know, one thing that's interesting, I think it's, he's making a very important point that we ought to bear in mind, and I hope Congress is bearing in mind, which is so long as they take enough steps so that the economy is growing strong in September of 2018, the Republicans will hold the House and they'll pick up a lot of seats in the Senate. And so wherever we are in 2019, we might be in a better position to get some good reforms through. So my hope is Republicans will do what they can today, make some steps towards some free market reforms to improve the economy and improve the delivery of health care for people, both in, you know, and also on the tax policy, and then revisit some of these issues in 2019 when they have a stronger hand.
Dave Lundy?
I would disagree with the notion they're going to have a stronger hand in 2019, and I would point to a recent Hart Research poll of battleground states. And that poll said that currently the Republican and favorable, unfavorable, if you're going to vote for a Republican candidate, was about even. The split was 21-20. But when told that their Republican candidate voted for the Republican health care bill, their unfavorables went up from 20 points to 51. So I would make the argument that, in fact, this is, and many Republican consultants I've heard make the argument, that this is death for Republicans and that they would be lucky if this didn't pass.
Charlie Meyerson.
I, as you know, I'm not making predictions, but my sense is that if a health reform plan of some sort passes, it will have more impact on the Republicans than if no plan passes, if the status quo continues.
More negative impact?
More impact in general. I think there will be consequences. I think there will be more churn in the political system.
But my,
probably more negative for Republicans.
Well, let me push back on that. I mean,
because they will have bought it. They'll own it.
Well, 7 years of promising repeal and replace, and now you've got your shot, and you don't take a shot. I think that looks pretty bad. 7 years of promises and you take a shot, you pass a bill, at least you've got your base somewhat on your side. Do you want to go into a midterm election? And the first midterm is that in which traditionally the party in power in the White House has lost the most seats. Does President Trump want to risk losing those seats, knowing that on the other side of losing the House could be the impeachment word?
No.
It's 1-800-723-8289. I'm Chris Roebling sitting in for Bruce Dumont. We've got a terrific panel. We'd love to get your calls. 1-800-723-8289. Join us after these words.
Well, Jason, I've got to tell you, you're pretty much everything this company is looking for in an entry-level candidate.
Great.
Your resume isn't quite what we're used to, but you've got a fantastic work ethic.
Thank you.
And I'm impressed by how you carry yourself.
So, should we talk about the job?
What? The job? Oh, sorry. Yeah, I have no way of recruiting or even meeting you. This interview didn't happen.
It may sound ridiculous, and that's because it kind of is. There's a huge pool of talent your company is missing out on. Meet the grads of life. Who are they? Talent worth knowing about. Young adults of unique determination and experience. An ideal fit for your company in an entry-level position, internship, or even mentorship. They might not have every qualification you typically look for, but they're exactly who your company needs.
Man, we really could have used him.
Don't miss out on a resource many innovative companies have already discovered. Go to gradsoflife.org to learn how to find, cultivate, and train this great pool of untapped talent. Brought to you by the Ad Council and gradsoflife.org.
Good evening, everybody. It is Beyond the Beltway, sitting in for Bruce Dumont. My name is Chris Roebling. Good to see you out there. We've got Charlie Meyerson here from ChicagoPublicSquare.com, Charles Lipson of the University of Chicago, and Zip Dialogue. Is that ZipDialogue.com?
Yes, yes. Zip Dialogue.
It's really fun. Where'd you get this idea of Zip Dialogue?
Well,
have you ever been there, Richard?
I just went on it when I heard about it, so I've been looking at it.
It's a blast. Okay.
Well, I like to. I mean, you know, like you, Roebling, and my friend Lundy, and so forth. I comment on public things, and I wanted a way of commenting on an almost daily basis, as well as putting up bizarre news stories when I find them.
Yes,
I like that.
And Charlie Meyerson, what is the province of ChicagoPublicSquare.com?
I call it Chicago's new front page, and it is a daily assembly of news that is of relevance to people who care about Chicago, and that, of course, includes much of what happens in Washington and what's happening in Chicago, and a little technology and environment and science stories along the way.
So what was your lead today?
My lead today was nothing because it's Sunday and I don't do it on Sunday.
Ah, you sleep late.
But on Friday, the story that I thought was interesting, it was actually a Washington Post story about Chicago. New research suggests that changing the distribution of food stamps in Chicago from once a month, everybody gets it on the same day, to distributed dates throughout the month led to, I believe, a 30% drop in shoplifting because stores are better able to manage supply and demand. It's an interesting study, and I can't cite you chapter and verse, but
shoplifting habits entirely.
So that kind of small economic change that can have an impact, a beneficial impact in the war on crime, I thought was a fascinating story.
Dave Lundy, tell us about Aileron Communications.
Well, Aileron is a PR and public affairs firm. We do a lot of work with energy and technology companies. Been around for 20 years, and we have a new employee starting tomorrow. I'm very excited about
Why don't you welcome him on this national radio talk
I would
show.
Be happy to welcome Katie Doolin to Aileron Communications tomorrow.
There you go. Katie, way to go. Richard Porter, what are you up to these days? You're a Chicago attorney. You were in the Bush 41 White House.
So by day, I help companies buy other companies. So a lot of fun, very interesting, really dynamic clients, which makes the job interesting. And on my spare time, I try to stay involved in Republican politics and policy and do what I can to help improve Illinois.
Are companies buying more companies, or are they buying fewer? Are they buying with greater frequency or less since this so-called Trump bump and these really high valuations for equities that we're seeing in the markets?
Yeah, valuations are high. It's a great seller's market. So a lot of companies that are privately held are looking at opportunities to get out. So there's a fair amount of churn in the market. It's strong. It's a relatively good market at the moment.
Can I ask a question? How important is the tax reform bill for the clients you are working with?
Well, the possible stimulus effect of bringing in a few trillion dollars that's captured off seas could have really a massive impact. That, as well as one of the proposals that Congress is thinking about, is the immediate expensing of capital investment. And so for capital-intensive industries, that can make a real difference on the bottom line. So
tell our listeners who are not in the CPA or attorney business, what does it mean to immediately expense capital expenditures?
What that means is that rather than it helps lower the cost of buying new capital goods. Basically, it will cut
What's
the cost.
What's a capital good?
You know, a piece of equipment, a stamp pressing machine.
Something that lasts
trucks,
a long time.
Things that last a long time.
Well, it used to be just at the personal level. If you bought a personal computer, you had to write it off over many years. If complete expensing would mean if you spent $3,000 on a computer, it's against your taxes this year.
Yes,
if it's a business expense.
Section 179 was very helpful to small businesses.
Let's get to the question then that arises from our earlier discussion of the health bill. So many people have said the Trump legislative program is for the health bill to mark some savings that could then be part of this tax reform measure, which would then be followed by the infrastructure measure. And Richard was saying earlier, if they get the tax thing right, they get the infrastructure thing right, then you'll see an increase in economic activity, and that'll be good for Republicans and maybe even good for the country. Dave Lundy, is that what's going to happen?
No, not at all.
Why not?
First of all, the $800 billion tax cut that Republicans want to do as part of the health care law, taking $800 billion away from poor people and giving it to rich people, is not going to meaningfully impact the economy. Second of all, they want to do it again with the tax bill, although we don't actually know what the Republican tax bill is because they've had a one-pager and that's all they've ever talked about. What's interesting, though, going back to what Richard talked about, is the tax reform that would bring all that offshore money onshore. I think that's something you could actually get bipartisan agreement on. I think that's something the Democrats understand. There's a value there. The problem we often have is when we start to go to the more traditional Republican tax cutting approach and saying, hey, if we just keep cutting and cutting and cutting, it'll stimulate the economy. There's a law of diminishing marginal utility, and it has stopped working. And if you look at states where they've tried to do more and more of that, like Kansas, total failed experiment, which is why the Republican legislature overrode Sam Brownback, the governor, and increased taxes in Kansas.
Actually, what happened in Kansas, there's a more prosaic explanation, which is that the teachers' unions put a lot of money into Republican candidates that would buck the governor. So that wasn't – I mean, the reality is that employment is up. The GDP activity in Kansas is up. Brownback's tax experiment actually worked. If you compare Texas to Illinois, you have two perfect examples of the red state versus the blue state model. In Texas, they have a $12 billion rainy day fund. In Illinois, we have $15 billion. In Illinois, we have a $15 billion
Richard, you can't seriously compare the economies of Illinois and Texas.
Well, Illinois and Texas could not be more different. Hold on one second. Isn't that exactly the problem? Isn't it the problem? Hold on, David. Hold on. Just. Isn't it the problem that Texas is growing very consistently, and Illinois, and we hate to air this dirty laundry to our national radio audience, but Illinois is stagnating while it is circling the drain because of the debt load of promises made by Democrats to their union, public employee union supporters. Isn't that what's going on in Illinois, Charlie Meyerson?
Well, Illinois has a number of problems, and one is that it has not bitten the bullet really yet on what I think is the most equitable solution to this situation, which is a substantial, and I mean greater than has already been done, increase in the income tax and a diminishing reliance on the property tax.
The problem with tax increases typically is that they solve a problem short term, but the propensity of public officials to spend an incoming tax dollar is slightly over one. So when you raise taxes, you solve a problem short term, but if you don't do any reforms, you don't do anything long term. And that was the problem with what they just did. They raised taxes quite substantially, but there were no reforms built in. If you want a comparison, Dave, the comparison is with Indiana or maybe Wisconsin. These are well-run states physically,
Both of which have higher income tax rates.
But Indiana, they're
capped property tax.
They have much lower aggregate taxes because property taxes.
And they're well-run and they're not corrupt.
I'd like to hear a little more about that.
In the case of Texas, for example. By the way, oil prices having fallen from well over $100 a barrel to under 50, and there is no income tax at all. 30% of the jobs, net jobs in the country since 2008, in four Texas cities, in Houston, San Antonio, Austin, and Dallas, accounted for 30% of the country's total jobs.
So why is that wrong, David? Why is it wrong to moderate government, to leave money with the people who earn it, allow them to spend it as they see fit, and then see the benefit in a growing economy? What is wrong with that picture?
Because that model that you've just described is not the difference between Texas and Illinois. The model you just described of cutting taxes and then hoping that it will trickle down. We've tried this again and again and again and again.
Richard, have we?
In Illinois?
The country.
I look at Florida. I look at Tennessee. I look at Texas. I look at Wyoming. And Wyoming is suffering from a real fall in commodity prices. But all the states, Washington State, that have no income tax are growing very rapidly. The reality is Connecticut, Illinois, and a lot of the other blues in California. California is an interesting model.
California is doing spectacularly well.
California,
so is Minnesota.
California has the driving force of the tech boom up in the Northern California, which is terrific. But the reality is California in the next tech downturn is going to get killed because they were so reliant on the top 1% exercising stock options. So when the stock market falls and people aren't going to have stock options to exercise, California's revenue is going to dry up.
And what's your explanation for Minnesota? Minnesota, where they also increase taxes and where economic activity in Minnesota is doing far better than Wisconsin. That economy is growing much better in Minnesota than it is in Wisconsin.
Oh, they're doing great in Minnesota there. Oh, no question.
I want to make the point. I don't think that people are saying if you have taxes, then you're strangling the economy.
Yeah.
I think it's a question of ratios and relationships. And I think what you're seeing in places like Connecticut and New Jersey and Illinois, where you've got these legacy obligations pretty much in the pension area. I mean, most of our problems stem from pensions that we cannot afford.
And the national audience should know that the unions got the pensions written into the Constitution.
Of the state of Illinois, and many states.
Where it becomes virtually impossible to cut them.
And so
the biggest problem, though, isn't that they can't be cut. It's just that they were too generous and granted. You know, the superintendent of schools in New Trier retires with a $350,000 pension. The idea that folks in a state where the median household income is $55,000, that teachers on a routine basis retire at $70,000 or $80,000 and within a few years of retiring are making more than $100,000, and people retire in their 50s. You can't sustain a system like that. I did the math on the Chicago budget a few years ago.
We got to end it right now. We'll come back. We'll hear from Richard Porter after these words and also from folks calling in at 1-800-723-8289.
Juice, Mom. Juice, juice, juice.
Mommy, why are we going to the store? Mom.
Mom, I want Mommy. Juice.
Mom.
Juice, juice, juice.
Mom.
Your child will have different needs at different stages of life, and that includes the car seat. See, car crashes are a leading killer of children ages 1 to 13. Protect your child's future at every stage of life. Go to safercar.gov/the right seat.
A message from the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
I wasn't prepared to be a caregiver to Mom. I had no idea how hard it would be and what I would need to know. Things I never thought of, like how to improve her mood and ways for me to stay positive. Luckily, I found the Caregiving Resource Center from AARP. It had articles about the basics, but also information about the hurdles I was facing.
Caregiving Resource Center at aarp.org/caregiving. Articles, tips, and tools to help you both care for your loved one and care for yourself. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Coast to coast, border to border, it's Sunday evening. That means Beyond the Beltway. Sitting in for Bruce Dumont, I'm Chris Roebling. Welcome to the program. We're joined here by Dave Lundy, Charlie Meyerson, Charles Lipson, and Richard Porter, who was making a point before the break about the ability of federal law to trump state constitutional provisions that are currently sort of protecting a lot of promises made to retired public employees. Please continue.
Well, I mean, at the end of the day, the purpose of the state is to provide for the welfare of the people of the state. And the federal constitution guarantees that each state has a Republican form of government. The problem you have in a state like Illinois, and there's some other states that are not far behind us, Connecticut, and actually Arizona is another state that has some of the same problems, is that some of the promises that have been made in benefit plans to state employees, like the pensions and health care, are too expensive. And state law says you can never change them. That once an employee is hired, you can't change it for their entire career. It's a similar problem in Connecticut and Arizona.
And in our case, it's constitutional, not just statutory law.
And it is in Arizona as well.
Okay.
But what's interesting is, and as a result of that, so you look in Chicago, I was about to tell you, is that 55% of the revenue that Chicago collects pays for yesterday. It pays for pension benefits. It pays for tort judgments. It pays for interest and breakage on their financing. 55%. How do you run a city when you got more than half the money you're collecting paying for yesterday? So part of what you need to do is restructure, ultimately, these obligations. And the way you get that done is with a federal law empowering the states to take those actions. Under the U.S. Constitution, federal law is supreme. So the state constitution is a state law. The federal government, through a couple of its different powers under the Constitution, could pass a law that would empower the state legislatures or direct the state legislatures to restructure some
of
their obligations.
Should there be state bankruptcy laws? Right now, a state cannot take bankruptcy.
So what's interesting is the Constitution includes in Article 1 a power for Congress to pass laws on the subject of bankruptcy. And bankruptcy deals with debtor relief. What we think about is bankruptcy today, Chapter 11. That's all a statutory construct. Congress tried three different times in the first 100 years of the Republic to pass bankruptcy laws, and all of them only lasted for 3 years. The structure we have now has lasted for about 120 years. In the 1930s, when the Depression caused a lot of municipalities to face obligations they couldn't finance, Congress passed a provision of the bankruptcy law to empower municipalities under certain circumstances to file for bankruptcy. After some amendments, the Supreme Court upheld that determination. So the federal government, on an extension of those same decisions, could pass a law that would enable states to restructure their obligations. That's what a bankruptcy law is.
David, because of our precarious situation and that of many other states, do you support this kind of legislation in Congress?
Well, I'd be interested to see it before I could say I'd support it. I mean, I'm intrigued by the notion of Republicans advocating for the federal government trampling states' rights. and state constitutions. It seems like a pretty dramatic kind of overreach that I would think a significant chunk of the Republican base would be opposed to, and a significant chunk of the Democratic base would be opposed to for different reasons. The Democratic base would be opposed to because they don't want the federal government to get rid of all these benefits, and the Republicans, though, I mean, literally this is anathema to everything Republicans have been saying for decades about how the federal government shouldn't trample on states.
Charles Lipson, isn't anathema the failure to self-govern? And isn't that what we're seeing in places like Connecticut or Illinois or even other states where we've made enormous promises that are impossible to keep?
I see two huge problems. The first is that Tocqueville, who I still think is the greatest writer on both democracy and on America, he came here when he was 25, stayed here for 9 months, and has still written the best books on America. He says that our democracy grows from the bottom up, and he doesn't just mean city governments. He means people getting together in Rotary clubs and all the small, the little battalions, as Trump, as Burke called these things. And I think that that's deeply eroded in America. So it's not just federalism that's eroded more and more power in Washington. The second thing is that I do think that you have a lot of states that have overpromised. And it used to be that 30 years, 40 years ago, if you want to pay high taxes and get high services, you could do that in Connecticut or you could do that in California. Problem now is that you're paying high taxes there, but you're not getting high services. The odd thing to me is that the people who are fleeing Connecticut are moving to North Carolina and then voting Democratic for the same policies that ruined them in Connecticut.
Charlie Meyerson, earlier in the program, you said that you thought there should be a bigger income tax increase in the state of Illinois. How high do you think taxes should go?
I'm not a mathematician. I'm not going to offer a number, but I do. I know, and you're disappointed. But look, here's
10%.
I'm not going to offer a number, and partly because I think you need a graduated tax so that it affects the
Illinois,
lower,
for listeners around the country, happen to have a single
flat tax.
Flat tax.
But look, here's the thing that I think so many people seem to miss about the income tax. It's inherently the fairest and most stabilizing of the taxes that's out there. If you have a great year, you pay a lot of money. If you have a lousy year, you don't pay much money. You don't have to lose your house. You don't have to move. It just seems to me to be the most inherently fair way of collecting money.
Speaking of fairness, we've got Mike waiting on the lines, listening to us on KXLY, our affiliate up in Spokane, Washington. Mike, we don't want to close the hour without hearing from you. Thanks for waiting. Your comment for the panel.
Very quickly. I want to bring up freedom and communist. China was recently dealt a setback. Chinese Nobel Prize winner has died of cancer. He'd been under house arrest in China up to his hour of death. Li's crime was to write and talk of freedom in China. So political and religious freedom, those who want to discuss freedom are sent to retraining camps or worse.
And what lesson has that taught you about life in China in 2017?
The communist government is becoming more restrictive than ever.
Thank you very much.
They are also taking over.
For waiting and for your comment. Thank you very much.
They're also imposing that more and more in Hong Kong. They had promised that it would be a different system, and they are undermining that.
It's Beyond the Beltway. I'm Chris Roebling, sitting in for Bruce Dumont. We've got an all-star panel here, and we're hoping that you're going to stick with us for the second hour, where we're going to go from talk about China to talk about Russia and Donald Trump Jr. Join us.
The Museum of Broadcast Communications is Chicago's perfect place for senior citizens. Enjoy a stroll down memory lane. Reminisce as museum artifacts, photos, and classic TV shows trigger recollections from your childhood. Enjoy the TLC you'll receive from our expert tour guides. Discounts for groups of 20 or more. Schedule yours right now at museum.tv or call 312-245-8200. Plan your fun trip now at the Museum of Broadcast Communications.
Hey, everybody, this is Josh Groban. After so many years on the stage, one of my favorite things about music is its ability to inspire and nourish the soul. That's why I'm proud to work with Feeding America, an organization that inspires hope for families in need and helps nourish the 16 million kids in this country struggling with hunger. Every year, billions of pounds of excess food go to waste, while one in five children may be left not knowing where their next meal is coming from, or if it's even coming at all. Thankfully, the Feeding America nationwide network of food banks collects surplus food and helps deliver it to kids in need across the country. But they can't do it alone. Join me in supporting Feeding America and your local food bank at feedingamerica.org. Together, we can solve hunger. Together, we're Feeding America.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
A historic moment from the archives at museum.tv.
There can be no stable and enduring peace without the participation of the People's Republic of China and its 750 million people. That is why I have undertaken initiatives in several areas to open the door for more normal relations between our two countries.
Experience more history at museum.tv.
It only takes a minute to find out if you may have prediabetes, and you can do it at doihaveprediabetes.org. But you're probably not going to. Nope. I'm sure you've got a perfectly good excuse. Kids, work. I get it. You're busy. So what better time than now? Let's begin. Raise one finger if you're a man. Ladies, none yet. Oh, count in your head if you're driving. Now, three more fingers for everyone over 60, two over 50, one over 40, one more if you're not physically active, another finger if anyone in your family has type 2 diabetes, another if you've got high blood pressure. If you're overweight, raise another finger, two if you're very overweight, and three if you're really overweight. You've just taken the world's first audio prediabetes test. And if you're holding up five or more fingers, visit doihaveprediabetes.org or talk to your doctor. There's no excuse, because prediabetes can be reversed.
Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
Still haven't talked about it. Beyond the Beltway, I'm Chris Roebling, sitting in for Bruce Dumont, who's taking a well-deserved night off. Joining me tonight on the panel, we've got Dave Lundy of Aileron Communications, Charlie Meyerson of Chicago Public Square.
Thank you. Well said.
.com.
Thank you.
We've got Charles Lipson of the University of Chicago and ZipDialogue.com. And we've got Richard Porter, former attorney for George H.W. Bush's, that's Bush 41 administration, and also Chicago attorney. Sounds like you're helping companies buy and sell other companies. Ladies and gentlemen, on a scale of 1 to 10. Richard, how stupid was Donald Trump Jr. to take this meeting based on what was in that email that he himself released this week saying this is part of the Russian government's support for your father?
So I actually worked in the 88 campaign, and one of the things, I was involved in opposition research, and you get phone calls like this all the time. And the best practice is to avoid them. Because when they come through you anyway, even if it's true, you've tainted it because it came through you. But the reality is most of these stories are false. And so that's one of the things you learn if you've been in the political business is there's a lot more conspiracies than there are conspiracies. So, you know, the big mistake. But we're judging Donald on a hindsight. I think at the time he was writing those emails, he wasn't exactly writing them with the idea that they would later be scrutinized for Russian collusion. It was unwise. But I'm unwilling to, like, hang the guy out and treat him like he is some kind of massive criminal because he took a meeting from someone to provide information. By the way, it was the Clinton Global Initiative that people were investigating. That means you need to look globally in order to find out some of what was going on. The reality is the Clintons took money from Russia. Trump took a meeting, which is worse. Bill Clinton got $500,000 from a Russian investment bank that was promoting the sale of the U.S. uranium interest to a Russian-controlled entity.
Oh, good God.
While she was Secretary of State.
Come on.
What is worse?
You're going to let him keep going just because he's saying the stuff that you want him to say?
No, no, no. I'm sorry. This was reported in the New York Times, April 15th, 2015. The New York Times covered this very extensively. I know it's inconvenient for you, but I'm going to go to Charlie Meyerson. Charlie Meyerson, what do you think?
Wait, are you going to ask another question? I get to answer the question.
I'm asking you the same one.
All right, here's my
answer. How dumb was Donald Trump Jr.?
Based on what we know at this point in time.
Porter's in with big mistake.
And I reserve the right to alter this as more information comes up.
Oh, my gosh. I know. You can't take a position on anything.
No, I'm going to take a position.
I've seen Linguini with more of backbone.
On a scale of 1 to 10?
Yeah.
11.
11. Okay, good. All right. You came through.
You can take the Linguini
it's
thing
11,
back now?
11,
take back the Linguini thing?
It's 11, but subject to emendation.
Well, there are so many surprises
look,
in this.
What's been missing in this entire program is any reference to The Godfather.
Yeah.
Okay? This is Fredo.
Yeah.
Totally.
And this is Fredo dumb.
No.
And I'll tell you why.
Fredo was disloyal.
Because
he was so dumb.
Yeah, but
you're right. Whereas Junior was being completely loyal.
Okay, go ahead.
Wait. I'll tell you why this was bad. Charles Krauthammer nailed it. In his column Friday, failed collusion still an attempted collusion. May not be illegal. And we don't know everything that's come out later.
See?
And we don't know that will come out. And we don't know, but I'm going to actually say something. But the.
Anderson said something this
morning. I said 11.
Lipson, let's
and
go.
We don't know who set this up, but he walked into a honey trap. Okay. But he should have known from what was already in these things. The Russian government is behind this, it says it in the things. He walked into it. Now, he may have done it thoughtlessly, but I'll tell you something. Manafort should have known better, and somebody who was the legal counsel for this, they should have run it by him, and if they didn't run it by him, that's their bad.
Should have known better is a phrase that I think could be the slogan for the Trump administration so far.
Well, you're getting into a bigger issue, but I want to talk to Lundy. Lundy, what's your partisan view?
My partisan, fortunately, as it usually does, coincides with my factual view.
Yeah, really?
That it is great that it's great that the Republicans want to say, oh, that little kid, that poor Don Jr., he's just a kid.
One Republican say that. Go ahead.
It was so amazing.
Go ahead.
That Donald Trump Jr. or Donald Trump Sr. was answering this question at a press conference about how his son, he's a good boy, he's a good kid.
He's almost 40.
And he's 39 years old, the same age as Macron, the French president who he was speaking with. But the answer to your question, Chris Roebling, is that it's say that Donald Trump Jr. is dumb and is Fredo. And by the way, that's true. He is. Manafort? You got Manafort. You got Jared in there. And by the way, they keep lying. And the bigger sin is not that what they said, not the decision to make to take that meeting, which was catastrophically stupid. They've been lying about it for a year, including Donald Trump Jr., who said 2 weeks later, he said 2 weeks later in an interview with CNN that this Russia thing, it's fake, it's outrageous, it's disgusting. How dare you accuse us of talking with Russia about it? It's like... No, you did it.
Aren't you uncomfortable with the parallels to the Red Scare, the 50s and the 60s in Hollywood?
Oh, good God.
It's just the reverse.
It's really remarkable. It's not remotely the reverse.
All these people that are paranoid about a meeting about adoption with a woman and the fact they had the whole thing is crazy.
No, what's crazy
is crazy. Here's the other thing. Here's the thing. You go back to 1960. Nikita Khrushchev bragged to Kennedy that he helped elect him because he didn't let Powers out of prison until after the election. And Kennedy acknowledged it had an impact. Ted Kennedy had contacts with the Russians throughout. And then, of course, you had Obama mocking Romney in 2012 saying,
hold on, Fritz Goldman, one of the great guys who helps put on – Fritz, let's hear that tape right now.
President, a chance.
Governor Romney, I'm glad that you recognize that Al-Qaeda is a threat.
Because a few months ago, when you were asked what's the biggest geopolitical threat facing America, you said Russia. Not Al-Qaeda. You said Russia. In the 1980s are now calling to ask for their foreign policy back because, you know, the Cold War has been over for 20 years. But Governor, you know, when it comes to our foreign policy, you seem to want to import the foreign policies of the 1980s, just like the social policies of the 1950s and the economic policies of the 1920s.
You know, here's the reality. The left and the media, which is maybe saying the same thing, are acting like jilted lovers. Their favorite fan, Russia, seems to have favored someone else instead of them. And they've gone absolutely crazy over this sort of problem. And there's a long history of the left and Russia having some interest in each other. Now, all of a sudden, there's some indication where some Republicans met with some Russians about the Clinton Global Initiative and what kind of payments were made by the Clintons from Russia. And that's a tragedy that's to a democracy?
David, okay, first of all, you're breaking news here if you are reporting that, in fact, that's what that meeting was supposed to be about. Because prior to now, nobody has actually reported that that's what that meeting was supposed to be about. Second of all, they keep lying about the meeting because now you have a former Soviet intelligence officer who was in the meeting. First, there were four people in the meeting. Now there are six. Maybe there are eight. They have to stop lying.
That's Dave Lundy, and he's one of the Democrats on the panel tonight. It's Beyond the Beltway. I'm Chris Roebling sitting in for Bruce Dumont. Richard Porter is here, Charles Lipson, and Charlie Meyerson. And you're here, too. Our phone number, 1-800-723-8289. That's 800-723-8289. We'd love to hear from you. We'll be back after these words.
A historic moment from the archives at museum.tv.
Thank you all very much. Admiral Kelly, Captain Card, officers and sailors of the USS Abraham Lincoln, my fellow Americans, major combat operations in Iraq have ended. In the Battle of Iraq, the United States and our allies have prevailed.
Experience more history at museum.tv.
Most of my family, they never graduated high school, so I'm trying to break that barrier.
My daughter, Brooklyn, was also a motivation for me to go back to school. Every day after work, went straight to school, and it paid off.
At age 26, Kareem finished his high school diploma.
I could not have done it alone. I see the future is really bright for me.
No one gets a diploma alone. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Tell you another thing. Hey, it's Chris Roebling sitting in for Bruce Dumont. We're having a great conversation. I want to ask about treason. Democrats are all over the thing with treason. We had there was some guy from Virginia who I think was running for some national office 18 months ago. A Jesuit volunteer guy. I forget the guy's name. Do you remember? He was talking treason. He was saying this week that Donald Trump Jr.
Yes,
and the Trump administration are a bunch of treasonous.
You're referring,
redneck,
of course, to the former vice presidential candidate, Tim Kaine.
Wait, okay.
Senator.
Who is this guy again now?
Yes, Tim Kaine.
Kaine.
Yeah.
Kaine. Wait. Wasn't he?
He was
the mayor of Richmond.
Abel's brother.
Yes, he was.
Okay.
The mayor of Richmond.
Okay. So the mayor is saying what now?
So let me just say,
you're an attorney. And he's talking treason.
Okay, first of all, I'm a recovering attorney. But second of all.
But you went to law school. You even graduated.
Second of all, I am not with the Democrats who are using the T word.
Okay,
I think
Meyerson,
treason is too strong.
Treason. Are we talking treason here?
An interesting question that I think is worth exploring. You know, I don't know. I'm not going to tell you yes. I'm not going to tell you no.
Professor,
the details come out every day.
I think that besides the fact that treason is way, way over the top, I think even the discussion about impeachment is wrong. Here's why it was wrong when the Republicans did it to Clinton. When a president is elected by the people, you really need a good reason to remove him or her. And when you start doing this, when you start slinging around terms that the person is fundamentally disloyal to the country or you want to overturn the results of a national election, you better have a darn good reason for doing it.
Completely
Richard,
agree.
Yeah, I do. Richard Porter, Hillary was upset. Isn't that reason enough?
Well, I guess that's not in the Constitution as the definition of treason. And, you know, the idea, again, I've already told you what I think on it. This is this is like the Red Scare, where people's associations and meetings are suddenly becoming vested with all sorts of
nonsense.
It's not about
dark
the meetings.
Suspicions.
It's about the lies.
But you're lying about
those
lies.
This is another question.
There has to be an underlying crime. I wrote a screenplay
that Lundy has had to put his name on in order to get it produced. What? That's how bad the Red Scare is now.
Let's go through this step by step. We've got a shot. Let's take it. Let's get some good conversation. You're about to say.
Oh, I think I've already said it, but I'm happy just to repeat it, which is, look, I'm a descendant, as I told in the beginning of the Salem witch trials. This has a lot of, like, of a witch trial, because witches don't exist. And the idea that somehow Russia was in cahoots with Trump, madness.
Here was your point.
No, it's not
your
madness.
Your point was that the lack of a predicate act or a specific violation. There is no
Watergate
underlying
had a
crime. Yeah. I'm asking you, Charlie Meyerson, and then you, Dave Lundy, what is the underlying act? What are we pointing? So Donald Trump Jr. had a dumb meeting. Is that collusion? Is that what we've been talking about?
The evidence continues to emerge on a daily basis. And for anyone to jump in at this point and say yes or no is premature and probably, to use a word that's much in vogue these days, stupid.
David, isn't this just political gotcha? Because Trump caught the national media off base?
Chris, I was as I've said to you before, I was a Soviet studies major in college.
Really?
Yeah, I was that. Back in the 80s.
How's that working out for you?
Actually, the Soviet Union went away. It worked out a lot better than my Republican friends, who apparently have forgotten what Ronald Reagan taught them about the Russians and the Soviets. It is astonishing to me that I'm sitting here in 2017 and Vladimir Putin has a higher approval rating among Republicans than any Democratic president.
The 80s called and wants their degree back from you.
Thank you, yes. The reality is that, you know, Chris, you have been saying this is a nothing burger, no collusion, nothing to see here. And then when we have in black and white an email that says, we want to meet with you because
with
the
Lundy.
Russians are supporting your father for president and we want to help you. Yeah. And then you have
Isn't
to add
that
to
what
that.
Really bugs you?
No.
I mean, it just sort of drives you nuts.
No, you
that after a generation.
This.
I will say, since you brought in my personal opinion into this, I'm going to give it to you.
Whereas you haven't all night long.
Don't hide it under a bushel basket.
Go to the videotape. You guys, you be the judge.
Let it out, Chris. Let it out.
Bruce Dumont will be the judge. No, I think that you've got a situation in here where they came awfully darn close and a lot closer than they should have. And I think that it was – I'm very disappointed.
Close to what?
To collusion.
Yeah.
I don't think there's collusion here, and I'll tell you exactly why. Nothing came of it, as far as we know now.
It's attempted.
And
collusion.
I have personally constantly said we ought to have the investigation and we ought to get the facts out and see what they are. But I've also said we're investigating without a predicate act. We're investigating without an underlying crime.
Well,
there isn't something that happened that we can point to and say – there was
we
this
can
link.
Point to no, the
wait a minute.
Hacking.
I just totally disagree with you.
Okay.
If the Russian walks in with a dossier that talks about bribery of Clinton through the Clinton Global Initiative to try to get things done, with email traffic back and forth, tying together the uranium sale and the payment to Clinton. Okay.
The underlying crime is
performed by the person who took the bribe. Okay. When you get evidence from another party of a crime of someone else, I'm not colluding with you. To commit a crime, I'm finding out about someone else's crime.
Unless you're a hostile foreign power.
Revealing.
No,
it is a rival. The 1980s want their foreign policy back.
They didn't have that evidence because it was all bogus. Hillary was one of nine department heads to approve that sale.
Can I just say this?
Isn't the quote from, it may be Bismarck, I'm not sure, it's worse than a crime, it's a mistake. And this was a mistake, whether there's a crime or not. And the issue on Russia, you're quite right, it's become this this giant shibboleth. But it has also done something very important. One of the reasons that the Republicans were consistently losing national popular votes after the end of the Cold War was because one of their major issues had gone away, which was national security. And the Democrats have managed on this Russia issue to put themselves, oddly, back in a strong position on national security. And I say that because I think that the Obama presidency on national security was the most disastrous presidency we've had since Jimmy Carter on North Korea, on China, on Russia, well,
on
what
Middle
we
East.
Actually, and on Iran, what we actually did.
Well, I don't know how you can say that. When you look at the George Bush administration.
Let's hear the point and then you can respond.
What I'm saying politically is that the Democrats have had a really hard time on national security issues. And yet, even though Trump is has been strong on China and is selling weapons now to Poland, has reversed a lot of these policies, and
right.
you see a lot of enthusiasm among military leaders and so forth for the reversal. Nevertheless, the Democrats appear to have a stronger foreign policy position than they've had in a long time. Now, they won't back that up with voting for
weapon system
and so forth.
Right. Okay.
Maybe the Seattle representatives will begin to like missile defense now that their cities could be blown up. But the fact is they've positioned themselves on foreign policy in a way that they hadn't done in years.
I think that's true. Now, Charlie Meyerson, your
President
response.
Trump has made it easy for Democrats to do that, of course. Well, I was just going to say, I don't know you can slap Obama without any analysis with the worst foreign policy record when you look at what happened under George W. Bush, including September 11th, including a couple of wars that haven't really worked out all that well. Obama
you would blame
was worse.
Him, actually, for September 11th.
I don't blame
11th.
Him for that, but it happened on his watch. It certainly was not a great moment in foreign policy.
Well, wait a minute. Richard Porter, are the Democrats in a stronger position because they have only discussed Russia since the morning after the election?
No, I think it'll end up backfiring on them, actually. I think that's the challenge, which is by directing all their fire at something, they're putting all their eggs in the Russia basket. And of course, one of the things we ought to recognize is the Russia situation grew out of the dispute with Ukraine, and it was Ukraine that was talking to the Democrats about what Manafort was doing with Russia. So you have Ukrainian involvement with the Democrats, you have this supposed Russian involvement with Republicans. The reality is we live in a global world. And so we have these interactions with these other countries. This is not that big a deal. What's a big deal is health care, tax reform, and a lot of the other things that are going to be driving through Congress.
And I would welcome the opportunity to fight with the Republicans on that any day of the week, because the Republican health care plan is the least popular.
Okay, but
I'm sorry. You guys are saying that all we want to do is talk about Russia. No, I'd love to talk about health care, because that bill is the least popular piece of legislation literally in a generation.
And it would be a lot easier to talk about those things if the Trump administration would just come clean once and for all, instead of this drip, drip, drip of we were wrong about that. Here's the
real story.
Right.
Stop
tweeting
about
Russia.
Right,
he keeps tweeting about Russia.
A political point, an observation was made by Professor Lipson, and I want to get your reaction. We've got the other two. Do you think that a road to the Democrats, say, taking back the House or the Senate, leads through the Russian issue?
No, I think it leads through health care.
Health care. But why then do you think the Democrats spend so much time talking about Russia compared to health care?
Because it's still worth investigating. And that's you have now a special counsel. You have multiple committees that actually believe, Republicans actually believe, there's something going on here that
there's
they need to investigate.
Because there's a split above his eye and there's bleeding coming out, so you keep hitting at the head. I mean, it makes perfect sense why they're doing it. Let me ask you a different question, Dave. You've been associated with the sort of center left of the Democratic Party as opposed to the sort of Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders wing, and what I want to know is which side's going to win in that internal struggle in the party.
Do you want me to answer that? Because
right
hear the
now,
music.
Two words.
The center left is going to win.
And that's Dave Lundy. He was just asked by Charles Lipson. We've also got Charlie Meyerson, Richard Porter. I'm Chris Roebling, in for Bruce Dumont, and we're going to be talking to you. If you give us a call at 1-800-723-8289, another half hour to go on Beyond the Beltway, and we want to hear from you, 1-800-723-8289. Thank you.
Well, Jason, I've got to tell you, you're pretty much everything this company is looking for in an entry-level candidate.
Great.
Your resume isn't quite what we're used to, but you've got a fantastic work ethic.
Thank you.
And I'm impressed by how you carry yourself.
So, should we talk about the job?
What? The job? Oh, sorry. Yeah, I have no way of recruiting or even meeting you. This interview didn't happen.
It may sound ridiculous, and that's because it kind of is. There's a huge pool of talent your company is missing out on. Meet the grads of life. Who are they? Talent worth knowing about. Young adults of unique determination and experience. An ideal fit for your company in an entry-level position, internship, or even mentorship. They might not have every qualification you typically look for, but they're exactly who your company needs.
Man, we really could have used him.
Don't miss out on a resource many innovative companies have already discovered. Go to gradsoflife.org to learn how to find, cultivate, and train this great pool of untapped talent. Brought to you by the Ad Council and gradsoflife.org.
Everybody, it's Chris Roebling sitting in for Bruce Dumont. We want to hear from you. We're going to listen to our friend Vince out in El Paso, Texas. He's listening to us on KLBJ. Vince, your observation on national security, which is such a big part of this conversation we're having right now.
Well, I'm just kind of amazed that the Republicans and the Democrats are so upset about the Russians doing exactly what the Russians are supposed to be doing. They're supposed to be messing with our elections. They're supposed to be doing the things that they did and pat them on the back because they did a good job. The problem is that we didn't do a good job of defending ourselves. And that's what we should be looking at. Not necessarily, we interfered in the Israeli election and everything. That's what we do.
Vince,
we interfere in everybody else. Why don't Russians are just doing what they're supposed to be doing?
Vince, quick question for you. Do you think that the Russian issue, just writ large, helps Democrats more, or does it hurt Trump more? Where does it sort out? Who wins with the Russian issue?
I think America loses. It's just a matter we're not talking about what's really important. Is that we're supposed to be defending ourselves, not that we're, the Democrats, they get all upset because their server was hacked into. They just didn't do a good job of protecting themselves. The Republicans got them, didn't have their server hacked into. And so the Democrats are all pissed off because they did that.
Thanks very much, Vince, calling from Sun City, El Paso, Texas, listening to us on KLBJ. Our phone in number 1-800-723-8289, 800-723-8289. Please give us a call.
Or they focused more of their firepower on the Democrats because they were trying to elect Donald Trump, as they said in an email.
And the
said it in the email?
The
publicist for a pop star.
The publicist for the
publicist.
Pop star.
Wait, and is he a Russian?
He's a British tabloid journalist.
He's not.
Okay, is he a member of the Russian government?
No, he's not.
Is he a Russian official?
He is not, no.
Okay, but he knew a Russian, and that makes him guilty.
He knew an Azerbaijani.
I think the reason.
He knew an Azerbaijani, and David is saying,
and quoting
this
Charles
is conclusive
Krauthammer,
evidence of the determination.
Quoting Charles Krauthammer,
I disagree
this excuse
with
of yours
let me speak to the callers.
It's pathetic.
What he said? I was actually hacked.
But he does it defense
so
is pathetic.
I have a GOP email address. My email was hacked. We learned that from the FBI, and my emails were published on a website which is associated with some of these Russian-based hackers. He's exactly right. What's happening in cyber right now?
Vince the caller.
Vince
from
the
El
caller
Paso.
Is exactly right.
There you go.
It's the wild, wild west. And what you see in Russia and some of the other places is they've set up a model, which was you can go back to the 16th and 17th century in naval warfare, which is the privateering model, where they let Russia, Nigeria, and some of these other countries allow private actors to operate on their soil on kind of a backhand deal that they'll share with them whatever the reaps of some of the fruits that they're able to steal. We've got to treat this as war, and the reality is we're not. It's not just defending. We've got to raise the stakes for the other countries that are invading our country.
I agree, and that's what makes the friendly relationship between the parties with which you think we should be at war and the Trump administration all the more trouble.
The Russians had two goals. I think that their main goal was to simply create confusion and uncertainty about the election. I think that they really disliked Hillary, and I think the main reason that they disliked Hillary was Bill Clinton's expansion of NATO in the 1990s right up to the door of Russia, and they thought that this might well continue under her presidency. But it's very important to understand that while Trump may be connected with this attempted collusion by his son and the campaign, and we don't know how deep it goes, Trump himself has actually done a lot of things that the Russians are furious about. The selling of missiles to Poland. He's now completely in on NATO, although he's trying very hard to get them to pay up. He has clearly trying to limit their influence in the Middle East in a way that was not true in the previous administration. So I think that what Trump has actually done on the ground is significant, and I think that we're also moving into tougher economic sanctions.
Let's take another caller. Bart is listening to us in New York City, New York. Bart, your bottom line point for the panel on Russian involvement.
My bottom line point is the Russians just wanted to interfere with our democracy and wreak havoc in our country. If they made it seem like they were for Trump, you get these kind of silly investigations. If Hillary would have won, they would have kept on leaking dirt on her as they had hacked her servers. They probably knew it was on her email server, and they would have just been drip, drip, drip.
I think this is exactly right.
I think Bart is going to the head of his class at Columbia. Way to go, Bart, calling in from New York City, New York. Thank you very much for that call. The number is 1-800-723-8289. The Russians are interested in a less powerful, a less influential,
less stable
America.
That's right.
And they want greater room, both politically and economically. They want greater influence throughout greater swaths of territory.
It's important to remember, though, that they're doing all this on an economy the size of Italy. And the fact that the price of oil, which they're a giant gas station, and that's it. They have not made an economic transition. They're a kleptocracy, a rule of thieves. And it's all based on natural resource extraction. So they have fundamental limits. And the fact that Trump, in particular, wants to see the price of hydrocarbons go down, not up, is tremendously damaging to them.
So, David, where does the Trump collusion narrative, where does that rubber meet the policy road with this litany from Professor Lipson of substantive positions by Trump that are irksome, that are antithetical to the interests of Russia? There is no treason here.
Okay, you just threw in the treason word just for fun. Look,
it's not just this guy who was the mayor of Richmond, Virginia. There is another person who was the attorney general of the state of Connecticut. And he stood up with all of the air of authority that comes from an appellate advocate.
Vietnam warrior.
And a Vietnam veteran. And he said the treason.
That's
word.
A joke.
So don't
try and put this off on just one goofy guy.
Where is the treason if Trump is acting against the interests of Russia and for the interests of the United States?
He's not acting against the interests of Russia. There are one-offs where Trump
David
is
disagreeing
acting
with
against,
Professor.
I am disagreeing with
okay,
Professor.
Okay, go for
Wilson.
It.
Well,
first time people
have done this before and failed.
Yes. Yes, but darn it, I'm not in your class, so I'll risk the F. Number one, just sowing the seeds of dissension between Trump. Right. Look how hard it was to get Trump to say, yes, I support Article 5. It took him 5 months, even when Mattis would say it, even when McMaster would say it. Trump wouldn't say that. Instead, he would come up with some other things that would drive the allies bonkers. A lot of the allies, the Germans, the French, are saying things like, we no longer have a G20. We've got a G19. Because Trump has literally created these seeds of doubt that if NATO was really against their back was really against it, if the Baltics were invaded, I don't think there's a great deal of confidence that Donald Trump would come to the aid of the Baltics.
It's possible for one to commit a treasonous act and then also commit other acts that are not treasonous.
Well, you think this is a treasonous act?
No, I'm just saying it's possible.
Look.
I do. All right, Richard Porter, has Trump been dilatory in his expression of Article 5?
Well, I think the Trump style of bargaining, and he's a very hard bargaining kind of guy, and what I do for a living is bargain. And so I represent people like Donald Trump. And so I see the type. And a lot of what you do is you leave things out there that you know the other side really wants. And so if what you want is you want to see people step up to the plate and make a larger contribution, you say, look, you want me to step up and be with you guys? Then you step and be with the organization too. It's very simple. If you want me to support Article 5, you support and you do your full 2.5% contribution on GDP under defense and things like that. So that's his mindset. It's foreign to foreign diplomacy.
The striped pants crowd.
Yeah. So their approach, and this would be, I think this was stated, you know, the long-term approach is you state your bottom line and stick to it resolutely. The Obama approach was to state your bottom line and fall back from it. Obama's position is to state some Trump position is to take a position that's pushing the envelope so the middle is somewhere closer to where he wants to be instead of the bottom line. So he doesn't give you his bottom line. He gives you something else out
Let
here
me give you this.
In Trump world. I mean, that's how he thinks and that's how he bargains, and it's just foreign to how people—
The problem in NATO is that they don't have to pay up if they know that we're going to defend them.
They're free riders.
Yes, but the problem is it's really difficult to escape from that. And the only way you can get anybody to pay up is to threaten to not be there for them. But if you do that, you scare the heck out of everybody, and that's exactly what's happened, and then you sow uncertainty.
With the minor problem with that narrative, which is that many of these countries already had been moving themselves to 2% before Donald Trump ever got elected.
So says David Lundy, one of our great panelists on this week's program, joined by Charlie Meyerson, Charles Lipson, and Richard Porter, sitting in for Bruce Dumont. My name is Chris Roebling. We're awfully glad that you watched this evening. And if you're listening on the radio, please stick by your radio or your computer. We'll be right back.
Going to the store. Mom, I want juice.
Your child will have different needs at different stages of life, and that includes the car seat. See, car crashes are a leading killer of children ages 1 to 13. Protect your child's future at every stage of life. Go to safercar.gov/the right seat.
A message from the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
I wasn't prepared to be a caregiver to Mom. I had no idea how hard it would be and what I would need to know. Things I never thought of, like how to improve her mood and ways for me to stay positive. Luckily, I found the Caregiving Resource Center from AARP. It had articles about the basics, but also information about the hurdles I was facing.
Caregiving Resource Center at aarp.org/caregiving. Articles, tips, and tools to help you both care for your loved one and care for yourself. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Roebling sitting in for Bruce Dumont. Dave Lundy has just made an extraordinary charge against Donald Trump.
Oh, good. We could do this on the air. That's fabulous. Thank you. Yes, I said that this is the greatest kleptocracy in at least a century, at least since the Tammany Hall days. You look at what Donald Trump is doing.
Who is benefiting? Who's stealing?
Donald Trump
is stealing
Trump
what? What's
family.
He stealing? What is
He's
he stolen?
Stealing taxpayer money and putting in his personal private pockets.
How is he doing that? How have you found that? Let's start with, as
Elizabeth Warren said, how?
Yes. Let's start with what he's done. There was a story literally just on Friday about how the State Department had to pay to to the Trump hotels. I think it was $40,000 for a particular event that they're putting in Trump hotels. Every time Donald Trump is not cutting the Secret Service a break when he's staying at Mar-a-Lago. Listen to me. He's not cutting the Secret Service a break when he stays at Mar-a-Lago, when they're at any of the other Trump properties. Just like during the campaign, when the Trump organization enriched itself on the campaign, they're doing the same thing now that he's in government. It is exactly the same thing. I could point to you 50 different examples
absurd.
Of this.
This is absurd. I mean, this is entirely
why
absurd.
Is it absurd?
Why because is it absurd?
What's he supposed to do at Mar-a-Lago? What's he supposed to do?
Cut the Secret Service a break. Why are you giving?
Do
why
they
are
have
you
a
insisting
government
on full
raid at
profit?
Mar-a-Lago?
Why are you insisting on fully profiting?
Does the Hyatt Corporation cut them a break when you have, you know, President Obama staying at the Hyatt?
Is the Hyatt Corporation the President of the United States?
He could have put his properties in a blind trust. He could have divested himself of his holdings.
That owned the hotel chain.
No,
I
sorry.
Wonder if this
Vice
is
President
a
Biden.
Why is that the same
Vice
thing?
President
never had a situation where the
hold
President
on, hold
United
on.
States.
Let's listen to Professor Lipson have, for a second.
Oh, sorry.
Listen
please,
and
professor.
Learn, Dave. The Vice President Biden rented the house that was next to his beach house for full price. My sense is that
to the Secret Service,
to the Secret
to
Service
protect,
that had to protect
to
him
to protect Dr. The, and Vice President
right.
Biden.
And I personally think almost all of this is nickel and dime stuff, and it may be that he shouldn't do some of this and so forth. My understanding is that when they expanded at Trump Tower and some of the stuff was rented out, it was rented out that they had more space and so forth. I do think that they should probably have an ethics person in there telling them to make sure that there's nothing special. And I can certainly imagine that if you're a diplomat coming to town, you want to stay at Trump International. But
okay.
I think billionaires give up money when they come to serve in government.
Not this one. This is the first one that's not. And the chief ethics officer in the United States was forced into early retirement because of his conflicts with Donald Trump, because he said what
Boy,
Donald
do
Trump was doing
here in
was completely unethical.
All right. We've got a few minutes left. A year from now, are you guys going to look back at this appearance on Beyond the Beltway and say, boy, I was on the program just that very week that we heard about Donald Trump Jr.? I mean, is this going to be a year from now a significant development in the history of this administration? Or is this going to be just one of just another faux pas, just another dumb meeting, just another something that should have been gotten out early and not held on to as long as it was? Where is this going to rank, Professor Lipson?
If we first of all, it's all in Mueller's hands. Secondly, if we don't hear anymore, it's, I wouldn't quite say a tempest in a teapot, but it's not as serious as if we find that there were a whole bunch of other meetings, that there was more that looks like collusion. That's what it all, and Lundy's going to look back and say, my God, I had all that hair?
Ouch.
Charlie Meyerson.
I think this is going to be, when I look back on this date from a year from now, I think I'm going to more fondly remember it or more likely to remember it as the day that we found out that the next doctor in Doctor Who is going to be a woman than I'm going to be to think about Donald Trump Jr.
But
I think
what
this
about
is
all
likely
your
to be
predictions?
A drip.
What about all your predictions? You know, will they come true?
I do think this is going to be a drip in what may become a torrent or may not be a torrent. Either way, I don't know that it's going to be. Yeah, that's me. I don't think it's going to be that big a deal.
Firmly on both sides
that's
of that
right.
line.
I think this won't be significant in either scenario.
Lundy.
I think this will be viewed as a significant development because it destroyed for all time the ability of the Trump people to say the Russia thing is just a hoax. There's no collusion, no evidence, no example where the senior Trump people ever met with any Russians to talk about
anything. That's right. It blows 6 months of their story completely out of the water.
I think it's a big nothing burger. You know, I do think, though, that what is a real issue is the Mueller special investigation. I know Scooter Libby. I've done work with Scooter Libby. And, you know, he was convicted of a felony for stating that – who was the former Face the Nation host?
Schieffer. Bob Schieffer.
No, not Bob. I'm sorry. That was not – well, anyway, Meet the Press.
Tim Russert.
Yeah. Tim Russert told me X. He said, Tim Russert told me X. And Tim Russert said, I didn't tell him X. Scooter later heard from Bob Woodward that I told him Bob told Scooter that he told him that fact. But anyway, because he said, Tim Russert told me X, And Russert testified he did not tell him that. He was convicted. He was charged and convicted of a felony. He lost his right to practice law. And the president ultimately commuted his sentence, but he was, you know, he was scandalized.
And that was where Fitzgerald was brought in to look at something that he discovered in the first week.
It wasn't day. That there was first no day.
They knew who Patrick they Fitzgerald. Knew to release on that information on Valerie Plume. So
therefore,
what happens
applying
is
applying that experience to this situation.
Bob Mueller was the FBI chief at the time. Okay, Comey was the deputy attorney general at the time. It's the same players minus Pat Fitzgerald. They will prosecute people for nothing and convict them. And that's the thing. It's really a tragedy about this thing. I mean, these special prosecutors become unguided missiles that justify their own existence with things like that. Somebody will be convicted
of saying.
Did you say
that under Ken Starr?
Yeah, look, I think the whole Ken Starr thing was ultimately it became too much of an issue. But, with Ken Starr, there was actually some underlying crimes.
There
was
a lot of crimes.
The land flips in the Whitewater, and then there was also the perjury
which
committed by the president
of
the United States.
Hold on, guys. My thanks to Charlie Meyerson. To Charles Lipson, to Dave Lundy, and to Richard Porter for coming on this Sunday. Beyond the Beltway is a Genebee production. I also want to thank Sam Greenberg, Fritz Goldman, and Dan Dorfman for their great assistance in getting this program on the air. My name is Chris Roebling, proud to sit in for Bruce Dumont. He's going to be back real soon. Good night from Chicago.
The Museum of Broadcast Communications is Chicago's perfect place for senior citizens. Enjoy a stroll down memory lane. Reminisce as museum artifacts, photos, and classic TV shows trigger recollections from your childhood. Enjoy the TLC you'll receive from our expert tour guides. Discounts for groups of 20 or more. Schedule yours right now at museum.tv or call 312-245-8200. Plan your fun trip now at the Museum of Broadcast Communications.
Hey everybody, this is Josh Groban. After so many years on the stage, one of my favorite things about music is its ability to inspire and nourish the soul. That's why I'm proud to work with Feeding America, an organization that inspires hope for families in need and helps nourish the 16 million kids in this country struggling with hunger. Every year, billions of pounds of excess food go to waste, while one in five children may be left not knowing where their next meal is coming from, or if it's even coming at all. Thankfully, the Feeding America nationwide network of food banks collects surplus food and helps deliver it to kids in need across the country. But they can't do it alone. Join me in supporting Feeding America and your local food bank at feedingamerica.org. Together, we can solve hunger. Together, we're Feeding America.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
A historic moment from the archives at museum.tv.
There can be no stable and enduring peace without the participation of the People's Republic of China and its 750 million people. That is why I have undertaken initiatives in several areas to open the door for more normal relations between our two countries.
Experience more history at museum.tv.
It only takes a minute to find out if you may have prediabetes, and you can do it at doihaveprediabetes.org. But you're probably not going to. Nope. I'm sure you've got a perfectly good excuse. Kids, work. I get it. You're busy. So what better time than now? Let's begin. Raise one finger if you're a man. Ladies, none yet. Oh, count in your head if you're driving. Now, three more fingers for everyone over 60, two over 50, one over 40, one more if you're not physically active, another finger if anyone in your family has type 2 diabetes, another if you've got high blood pressure. If you're overweight, raise another finger, two if you're very overweight, and three if you're really overweight. You've just taken the world's first audio prediabetes test. And if you're holding up five or more fingers, visit doihaveprediabetes.org or talk to your doctor. There's no excuse, because prediabetes can be reversed.
Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.